Hello and welcome to another episode of the World Athletics Podcast. I'm Ben Harlow and today's guest is, as you've probably seen from the title, Dalila Mohammed. She is the Female World Athlete of the Year, 400 meter hurdles world champion and world record holder. She was really, really interesting and incredibly analytical in her performance and how she operates. And I'm not going to lie, it got quite deep in the episode talking about all sorts of things about what next for her. Where do you go from being a world champion and world record holder from the Olympics and beyond? So, yeah, it's a really interesting listen and I hope you guys enjoy it. Did your coach give you that 4 weeks?
He did give me 4 weeks.
I feel like you probably deserved it. Maybe.
Yeah, I think we did. The 100 hurdles had to get back a little sooner. They're running indoor, but...
Yeah, of course, world indoors and that kind of thing. Who do you train with?
I train with, Coach Lawrence Johnson and Brianna Rollins, Christy Castlin, Karan Clement.
Wow.
So we have a couple...
Really strong group.
Yeah.
What's it like being, with such world-class... athletes?
It's good. We definitely are pushed every single day. Motivation is there. You love to kind of see someone else motivated and motivates you. So I love that kind of atmosphere.
Who's the best hurdler in your training group?
Christy. That's not even... It's the truth, Christy, for sure.
Would you ever do 100 hurdles?
I would love to. I'm just not that good at it.
Barriers come at you too fast.
Well, not fast enough. I think that's the problem.
Oh, really? I always think, though, watching you race, in the 400-meter hurdles for women, that the barriers are smaller than the straight 100-meter hurdles. I always think you are one of the best hurdlers on the track.
Thank you. I hear that also, but not compared to 100 hurdler. I think their technique is just far superior.
Flawless. Who is your favorite training partner?
Oh, man, I guess Brianna.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you guys hang out a lot?
I mean, we all hang out equally, but I picked Brianna because I think she really, really trains hard. And she definitely motivates me, I think, the most when I'm at practice.
Who's your coach?
Lawrence Johnson.
Okay. And when did you first start with him?
I've been running with Lawrence since the Rio Olympics, so 2016.
So prior to Rio?
So, no.
Oh, Rio. Just after Rio.
Well, the year of Rio. Oh, so I came with him in February of 2016.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's actually kind of, a sort of late switch prior to the Olympic Games.
That is very a late switch. It was just kind of a weird year. And I just kind of knew where I was at. It wasn't working for me. And I just needed kind of a mental change more than anything. And I reached out to him and we kind of been working together ever since.
Yeah. Who were you training with before?
I was training with Yolanda Demas.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, cool. Yeah. Interesting. So I kind of want to... You've had an incredible year, I think it's fair to say. with the US trials where you broke the world record, and you kind of had... you were kind of... When you crossed the finish line, a lot of people said, why isn't she going crazy? But you were just like, that's just me.
I think that's just really what it is, that is just me. And I think for me also, it's I've been working kind of so hard for it at practice, and I kind of been hitting it at practice over and over again. So continuously kind of hitting those times at practice. It was kind of just for me, that race was just about putting it all together and doing it on a stand and doing it in a race that where it mattered, where there is an official time. So obviously I was extremely happy, but I think that's just me. I just internalized my emotions.
You know, I read a really interesting article and it kind of has reminded me of this, where it's this thing called the arrival fallacy. I don't know if you've heard of it, where basically I wrote it down just so I can word it properly, but
please.
Arriving rarely makes you as happy as you expect. By the time you've arrived, you expect to reach it. So it's been incorporated into your happiness. So you quickly become adjusted to the new state of affairs. Do you think that you kind of, obviously you were training and you felt like you kind of knew it was going to happen. It was about time.
I think that is a good way of putting it. Obviously you want it, but when you're working towards something and it's such a definite goal of what you're trying to accomplish and what you're trying to, it's not like... I was like, I had no idea what time was possible. I think I had a real realistic idea of what time was possible. So I think there is not, you don't want to say expectation. You don't say, I expect to break the world record. But there is somewhat of an expectation that probably limits your emotion.
Yeah, I think Because that's the thing, like, you can be, you obviously don't want to come off as like braggy, like, obviously I expected to run the world record, but if you're being realistic and you're analysing, you and your coach know what's going on. Yeah. So, and I thought it was quite interesting, your coach kind of said after you'd run it the first time, he was like, well, she was a bit slow getting out the blocks. She kind of went into hurdle late, not the right way. And it wasn't, because, you know, most people would be like filled with jubilation or whatever, but you guys kind of, you had a measured reaction, which, yeah.
I think, yeah, well, like you said, you don't want to feel braggy. And I think right before that race, my coach said to me, he's like, I don't see how you can absolutely not break this record. And I think, you know, looking back, I just took it in the moment. I just took that for truth, you know. But in all reality, he could have just been saying that as a way to motivate me, to make me feel like I couldn't possibly mess up. And I think that's probably what he was trying to do. But in that moment, I just took that as truth. Like, if he's saying that, then it must be true. And so just kind of looking back, he kind of talks about things that I kind of did wrong in the race. But even that, to me, I think was just, you have to still find ways to improve in the 400-meter hurdles. After you break a world record, what's left? What else is there to do? I think there's that kind of idea that you've kind of done it all. But so for us, it's like, okay, well, how do we possibly improve? And I think for him, you know, speaking to reporters and speaking out was just his way of saying that to me, that there's still more you can do.
I completely understand where you're coming from. When you do, it's a thing with the arrival fallacy, when you arrive somewhere and you do it and it's like, well, what's next then? Like, where do I go from here? And I do think that, I mean, obviously you took it that step further going to Doha, but again, it was more of a matter, a matter of time type thing. Obviously, you went into, I think you did Zurich, was probably the next biggest race, the Diamond League final. And I got, I saw in the New York Times, there was an interesting quote from you about the about that race. And you said you just didn't feel anything. You weren't nervous. You weren't anxious. You just didn't feel anything.
I mean, that's really completely true. I remember telling my coach, I always tell him exactly how I feel because I think it matters. And I think as a coach-athlete relationship, you kind of want to just be as open as you possibly can. And in that moment, I'm like, well, what are you going to do for me? Because are you going to help me, like, you know, give me some motivational words? And he just kind of just nodded his head like, okay, you know. And that was, sorry.
That's okay.
And that was literally it. And I guess it's just, I guess he understood how I felt. And we kind of knew that that race was going to go as it was going to go. And there really wasn't much we can do. After you coming off such a high, there's bound to be a low. And as much as we're trying to fight that low, it's just kind of almost inevitable. And we just kind of had to, we could have pulled out. But, you know, I know I didn't want to do that. And so, yeah, I think it was just kind of that kind of feeling like just empty.
That's really interesting in comparison to most athletes really hype themselves up going into a race and their coach is like, you're going to go there and you're going to smash it, X, Y, Z. Whereas you and your coach taking this measured approach is so, I don't know, it's just, it's, you don't really hear it that often in the sport.
Well, I always tell him, I'm like, do not lie to me. And not that I think he would, but I'm like, I want to know the truth. If it sucked, like, tell me it sucked. If it was great, tell me it was great. Like, don't ever. And that's what I, like, literally tell him at practice. I think that's just my personality. And I think that's almost his personality, too, where it's just, like, we want to know I guess this idea that you can't be perfect, but we're both trying to be perfect. And if you're not trying to be perfect, but trying to have a perfect race. And if you're trying to have a perfect race, you want to know every little thing that could be better. So I think that's just kind of our personalities. And that's kind of why it kind of comes across as so measured. And maybe it is.
But that's not a bad thing at all. Clearly it's working, obviously. I've never really heard of an athlete. So you didn't have anything injury-wise. What is wrong with your body going into Zurich? It was just mentally you weren't there.
Yeah, it was just mentally. I think, you know, physically, we did go up in our training, kind of slowed me down again because we had, after Des Moines, after running so fast, we still had quite ways to go until the Doha final. And I think it was about 2 months. So that's a long period of time to just stay at such a high level. So we did go back up in training, but no, I wasn't injured at all. I think I was just slightly, you know, drained mentally. And I think that's just a combination of those two things.
Yeah, that's fair enough. And how did you, When obviously Sydney ended up winning the Diamond League, did that almost take the pressure off you?
I guess I've never looked at it. No, I just never looked at it that way. I remember seeing her face when she crossed the line, and she seemed a little bit, well, obviously she was very happy, and I don't want to use the word shocked, because, you know, she's definitely knows she's capable of winning the race, but I do remember seeing her face and just genuinely feeling joy for her as well. Like, to kind of have done that as your first time on the scene is quite an accomplishment. So yeah, I do remember just kind of feeling that way, and it was her moment, and letting her kind of have her moment, and it wasn't about me at all, and I didn't even think about myself in that moment.
That's really nice.
Oh, thank you.
Are you guys close at all?
You know, I wouldn't say we're close. We definitely are competitors, friendly competitors, mm-hmm. and I think, you know, with time we could definitely build a stronger relationship, but I also just think we haven't really been around each other quite as much as me and other athletes.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I mean, obviously, you are the two, fiercest rivals in the event currently. There is obviously other women mm-hmm. who are running great times, but you two are kind of that next level above, so it kind of makes sense that you wouldn't be like best friends, I guess. Going into Doha, did you say, obviously Zurich was a bit of a low point. Did your mood kind of pick up? Was that, did you kind of, going into it, did it kind of flip around again?
I definitely think it was all in timing. And I definitely, at that moment, wanted to kind of just refocus. I kind of knew after, you know, our championships in Des Moines that I kind of had to refocus, but Zurich was all about really refocusing. We went to Amsterdam. We spent some time in Amsterdam. I did something with Nike, and we kind of just had a different atmosphere for training. That definitely helped. Getting out the hot sun definitely helped.
Europe can do that for you.
And I really welcomed it. I loved kind of just being out there. I'm like, yeah, it's cold, but it's almost better than being in 100-degree weather right now. And So that was nice. And it just was a good kind of just happy moment. It was just me, my coach, and my training partner, Jonna Woodruff. She also runs the 400 hurdles. So It was nice.
Nice. Okay. And then when did you arrive in Doha?
I arrived to Doha, I want to say, quite early. I don't remember exactly. Maybe like 2 weeks or a week and a half early.
And moving in as the event drew closer, where was your headspace? Is it like, I'm winning this, or?
I definitely wanted to win. I don't think my headspace was that. I think actually going into it, I was just kind of, as an athlete, you have those moments when you know you're going to do something phenomenal, and just because you feel good, your body is so in tune, your nervous system is firing. And for me, it wasn't that in Doha, and I just was kind of waiting for that moment. I'm like, okay, is the system going to turn on? And me kind of just taking each round as it came and just listening to my coach and doing kind of exactly what he kind of said to do.
Mm-hmm. And did the fire ever come?
It did. You know, it's probably completely mental, but I do remember in the final round, I told my training partner, Jonna, I just joked with her. I'm like, oh, I'm on tonight. And like, you know, and she knew what I was talking about. So obviously it was just like, you know, something casual between the two of us. But mm-hmm. I definitely do feel that I felt, you know, myself almost, or just that what you want to feel when you're going into a big race, I should say.
Yeah, definitely. That's, it must be a really empowering feeling. Were you ready to destroy?
I just was focused. I think, you know, it's about destroying. It's just like that mental where you can get into that zone where everything else becomes quiet. Mm-hmm. Like there's, like you're just so in your head almost that you're in a world, but it's like you and everything else is just silent around you. And I kind of get into that zone when I have to compete. And I think you want to be in that. And it's kind of hard to like get in there. It's just, it has to happen naturally.
Yeah, definitely. Were you so, like, in the call room and that kind of thing? Do you listen to music to block people out? Or
I don't. So I'm just like really in my head. I had an interview earlier when they kind of asked me about the music I listen to. And truly, I don't listen to music before I run. You're feeling nervous. And I think, you know, we kind of use music to kind of block that out. But I kind of like living in it and just kind of experiencing what it feels like to kind of just be in that kind of zone. And I think it just kind of helps you to compete.
Yeah, well, clearly immersing yourself in the whole thing works well for you. obviously you did win in a world record time, and heading down the home straight, obviously you and Sydney were very, very close. Could you feel her?
Oh, absolutely. I definitely knew she'd be coming the whole race. We were kind of, based on the lane draw, I was in six. I believe she was in four. So we kind of have like that one little gap between us. And I definitely was conscious that she'd be there. So even if I had felt her or not, mm-hmm. I was conscious of her being there.
And did you think the world record would go down again?
I definitely thought it was possible. I will say that. I mm-hmm. thought it was possible. I knew, you know, Sydney would be close.
Yeah.
And with her being close, it was definitely, we were definitely going to push each other. So how fast, I don't know. But I definitely thought, you know, world record is quite possible to mm-hmm. happen tonight.
And when you did cross the finish line, world record is kind of what every athlete dreams of. what were you actually thinking?
I think I was just thinking if I won or not. And I really, truly didn't know. Sydney is actually the one that told me. She was like, you got it. Because she could tell that I was kind of looking at the board, like looking back and forth, like you don't want to celebrate too early, or like, well, who actually won the race? And so she was the one that let me know that I was the one that won the race. And I was, you know, obviously the record was something that I would love, mm-hmm. but it wasn't, you know, what I truly wanted at that moment. At that moment, I just really wanted to come home with the world championship title.
Reflecting after it, so maybe like the next day or so, what were your feelings?
I was excited. I think, you know, at that point, though, it was one of those moments, again, where I just couldn't enjoy it completely to the fullest or to what I would want to. And because they had told me that it was quite possible that I would run on the 4x4. And I was just like, okay, but, you know, with America, you never know who's going to run into the 4x4 until literally the day of.
Really?
Yeah. So it was just kind of like, you have to stay ready for the 4x4. So I just kind of had that in mind. And you know, I didn't want to celebrate too much and just kind of, you know, not be at my best for my teammates for, mm-hmm. on the 4x4. So I just was kind of waiting around to see if I had to run the 4x4.
How did the 4x4 go? Did you enjoy it?
I did enjoy it. It was nice. It was definitely a different experience when you're running something with three other women and you get to kind of experience that joy together.
I was also going to say, I think you did an interview with the New York Times as well, further down the line, and you said something I thought was really interesting about, you said, obviously you're an athlete and you're a really successful athlete, but you said, who am I going to be 20 years from now? What's something I stood for?
Yeah, I did say that. you know, I think that is what it is for me right now. It's just kind of being like, what is your legacy? Or, you know, I watched all these great athletes and such as like Muhammad Ali and all the things he stood for. And I think for me, that's kind of what I want to be. And it's not, I want to be Muhammad Ali. That's I'm just saying I want to be the type of athlete that when it was all said and done, it was more than just your athletics.
Mm-hmm. And what is it that you want to stand for?
Oh, wow.
I know, this is really heavy. Sorry.
No, that's fine. I think right now, I guess what I really want to see, well, I'll just say it. You know, I really want to see us, you know, as women, I don't feel like we're paid as fair as the men, especially in track and field. And I definitely think we should kind of push towards that. I think there's so many things with just kind of empowering women that's been going on with such as, you know, Allyson Felix speaking up for just our rights and having bearing children when it comes to relates to our contracts and just improving the sport for women. I think that's definitely something that I'm leading towards, and I definitely would love to see us just have equal pay if or not exceeding or maximize what we can earn as a woman.
That's an incredible thing to say. That's absolutely what you should stand for. That's amazing. What do you think are the next steps for women and how to make that change?
The next steps are, you know, that's a hard question and what the next steps actually would be. I think for one, it's just about speaking out for it. That would probably be the initial steps in speaking about the difference in things that women get paid versus the men in our sport and bringing awareness to it.
Do you think there are other aspects as well as just the pay, just like general treatment or...
You know, I guess that's going to be, you know, up for interpretation of how people kind of take it one way or another. Do I think the men are truly treated better? I won't say that, but I definitely think just in the discrepancy in how much a woman can earn is definitely says enough in itself.
I mean, you're a woman, you can speak to a woman's existence. So, I mean, obviously you can't speak for all women, but like, you know how you feel about it. Mm-hmm. And it's really important to talk about these kind of things. Obviously, I think from researching you and chatting to you now, you seem like a sort of analytical person. Do you think that's fair to say?
Yeah, I would say that's fair.
Yeah, I remember, again, like when you did your first race, because you were brought up in New York, right?
Yes, I was.
And you said, I think it's in your first race, you didn't win, and the other girls, some other girls beat you, and you weren't really bothered about the fact that you lost. You wanted to know why those girls beat you.
Mm-hmm. I think, yeah, that's just kind of how it was for me. I guess as a kid, you don't realize how you are. You're just living your true self. And I remember that running that race and just... because I was known to be a fast kid, like, in my neighborhood, and I was racing, street races and just playing outside. And once I got to the track team, I expected, I guess, almost to kind of still be that fast kid. That, and here I was in a world where everyone was that fast kid, and I no longer was amongst the best. And I remember that first race kind of just looking at the other girls and just almost in amazement of just, like, and I guess looking at it as an analytical sense of this, what were they doing differently and what did I need to do differently? Were their legs moving differently? Were they, did they have a different stride pattern? Were mm-hmm. their arms moving differently? I think that's just kind of how I looked at it as a kid.
Yeah. And do you think that's definitely followed through?
I mean, it's absolutely followed through. It's just kind of how I looked at everything and, just kind of being, I watched even... FloJo and her races, and how I watched one video talk about just how her stride pattern truly was superior maybe to other current athletes, or not superior, but just almost flawless, and she did run slightly differently than other people. So I always look at little things like that to kind of help improve myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really interesting. Mm-hmm. Did you go to university?
Yes, I went to USC.
Oh, okay. What did you study?
Business.
Okay, kind of makes sense. That's cool.
Well, I studied business. I remember just kind of getting into that program, and the business school in USC is a difficult program to kind of get into, and I just really wanted to... I thought that would be a good degree to kind of fall back on after, that could, represent a lot of different career paths that I may go to after track and field.
Where do you see yourself going?
Oh, man, I guess... there for a long time, I really thought I'd go into fashion. I had business, but a concentration in marketing, and I thought I'd kind of use that and in the world of like advertising. And now mm-hmm. I think I'll be, more on the side of, I don't know how to put empowerment of women into a career, but I think that'll be my focus.
You can definitely do that, public speaking, or you could do it through fashion, empowering women through fashion.
Absolutely. I would love to have a line and something on the lines of it being something that's empowerment to women or something special, unique to women. I'd love to have something with our uniforms in a more modest kind of fashion sense. So that's kind of what I'd love to do.
Nice. That's amazing. Okay. So I guess my final kind of questions are, 2020, it's a big year. Do you have 2020 vision? That's so cheesy.
No, it's cute.
I am so sorry.
I'm always like kind of this person. I kind of think about how the year is going to plan out or before, and I kind of write my goals down. Even if I don't physically write them down, I kind of just mentally kind of write them down. And I kind of pick a word to kind of go with the year. And this year has been kind of difficult. I don't really know. I guess we are really see this year going. So I guess to answer your question, no, I don't. But, I'm definitely just taking it day by day, and I just started back training. So I'm definitely focusing in and what I want this, how I want this year to kind of go.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, I think that's pretty much it.
Thank you.
Thank you. So that's all for this episode, but thank you so much for listening all the way through. If you did make it to the end, I know it's not easy, but if you are interested in following and what we're doing on social media, we're at World Athletics on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and now TikTok. Yep, we're on TikTok, which is, yeah, fun. But yeah, that's all for this episode. If you want me to track down any particular athletes, just DM me, as always, so you can find me at _BenHarlow on Twitter. And yeah, that's it for this episode, but we'll come back for one last time for 2019 at the end of December with a kind of year wrap episode. So yeah, thanks very much for listening, guys, and we'll see you next time.